This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Hit and miss. Amazon knocks it out of the park with $38 billion in sales. But its profit number was a huge whiff.
Slick spot. Why some are concerned the threat to the stock market rally might come from big oil.
And ka-ching. Why home sellers are cashing in like it's 2007. All that and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Thursday, July 27th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. The earnings floodgates open today on Wall Street. It was the busiest day of corporate earnings so far this quarter. And after the bell, a company that's seemingly in the news every day, Amazon. The company posted its ninth straight profitable quarter after years of bleeding red ink. And at one point, the company's founder and CEO, Jeff Bezos, was the richest man in the world. And then he wasn't. That's because the stock fell after the numbers came out. And here's why. Amazon earned 40 cents a share. Good, but Wall Street wanted $1.42. There's the big number, of course, revenue, which jumped 25% to $38 billion in the quarter. But shares initially fell following the results. Deirdre Bosa has the main takeaway for investors.
The main takeaway from Amazon, its profit engine is slowing as the company continues to spend big. Amazon's cloud business, AWS, has become the most profitable business segment for the entire company. But over the last now 9 quarters, growth has been decelerating as Microsoft's rival cloud business, Azure, has boomed. Meanwhile, Amazon continues to invest heavily in new markets like India and in new businesses and products. That may not matter much to investors, though. Amazon and Jeff Bezos are known for making bold investments, even at the expense of profit. Looking forward, investors will want to know when and how those big investments will pay off, and especially how its Whole Foods acquisition fits into longer-term plans. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Deirdre Boza, San Francisco.
RJ Hottovy joins us now to talk more about that mixed quarter from Amazon and what he sees ahead for the company. He's sector strategist at Morningstar. RJ, welcome. Good to see you again. Did something go wrong here? Why were people so surprised with the number?
No, I don't think anything went wrong here. I think it was just a heavier investment quarter than usual for this company. And if you look at the things that they're spending on, we'll get a little more clarity on the call this afternoon. But it looks like, again, they're investing in fulfillment centers. I'm guessing that's both U.S. and international. But there's also a lot of technology expenses as well. And I'm assuming that also has to do with the Echo portfolio products, some of the other devices they've been working on, as well as building out infrastructure for their AWS business as well. So I'd be more concerned if we weren't seeing that top line accelerate. You know, that's the real number that to focus on here, particularly the things that are more sticky, too. So the third-party sales, so vendors selling through the platform, that number is getting bigger, and that just shows that Amazon's becoming a vital marketplace for those sellers. AWS, while decelerating, still a very big number, still a lot of value-add services there.
Right.
And then even Amazon's own products, I mean, they're doing well. The first-party sales are doing very well, too.
All right. You have viewed the stock as undervalued. Mm-hmm. Would you add to positions on the slight sell-off that we've seen in the stock post-results?
Yeah, I think this, certainly the pullback opens up an opportunity on this name. I think this is one of the more dynamic long-term stories really in the consumer space we've ever seen. I think that'll continue to play out. Certainly there's going to be periods of investment where the profits look a little bit weaker, but as long as they're backing it up with both member acquisition and, more importantly, retention and engagement, which I think is a big part of the Whole Foods deal coming up, you know, I think this is worth a look here at these levels.
What's Whole Foods going to do for them?
Yeah, I think what's interesting, there's really a number of facets to the transaction. I think the first and foremost is it gives them credibility in the fresh food market. That's something they've lacked for some time. They tried to get in the grocery space, but really never had the suppliers backing it. And I think this will help to move Prime members from that Prime tier to that Prime Fresh tier. I also think there's a private label play here. I think you're probably going to see the third and fourth brand at Whole Foods removed and replaced with Amazon's own private label brands. On top of that all, too, I think there's just a lot of interesting ways that Amazon can redesign the stores, make it more of an experiential feel. Yeah, I think there's a number of angles to this transaction that ultimately keep more and more shoppers
right.
coming back. And more importantly, they're paying for a higher Prime pricing tier, which drives a lot of the profits in the retail side of the business.
All right. RJ, thanks again.
Thank you.
Good to see you. RJ Hottovy
yep.
with Morningstar.
Another big company reporting after the bell was Dow Component Intel, and by most accounts, it was a strong one. The tech company earned 72 cents a share, beating estimates by 4 cents. Revenue came in just below $15 billion and ahead of consensus. Intel also raised its full-year sales outlook, and Wall Street responded accordingly, giving shares an initial pop after hours. Josh Lipton has more.
$4.4 billion. That was a key number in Intel's report. It refers to the revenue generated by the data center group, or chips for the servers used in data centers. Betsy Van Hees of Loop Capital and Intel Bull says the data center has been struggling, but with this report, Intel met expectations for the quarter and, more importantly, she says, reaffirmed its full-year guide of high single-digit growth for the unit. Intel Bulls make the bet that sales of server chips can make up for a challenged PC industry. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Josh Lipton, San Francisco.
Two other Dow components out today, Verizon and Procter & Gamble. The return of unlimited data helped Verizon sales surge past estimates. Meanwhile, cost cuts helped results beat expectations at Procter & Gamble, although sales there were flat. Investors liked the news out of both companies, in particular Verizon, which was up more than 7%.
On Wall Street as a whole, the Nasdaq touched a record high before tech and a big reversal during the day. The Dow managed another record close. The Dow rose 85 points to 21,796. Nasdaq dropped 40, and the S&P 500 was off too.
Royal Dutch Shell said profits tripled, while ConocoPhillips adjusted earnings were much better than expected. As a result, both companies higher on the day. But while earnings season so far has been fairly strong, Bob Pisani explains why the oil patch could be a threat to the stock rally.
Earnings are humming along with gains of more than 10% now expected for the S&P 500 in the second quarter. But there's one potential little fly in the ointment out there, and that's big oil. ExxonMobil, Chevron, and other big names will be reporting tomorrow, and something unusual is happening. Because oil never rallied in the second quarter, as everyone thought, analysts have been continuing to take down oil company earnings estimates into July. And they're also continuing to lower them for the third quarter. How did this happen? Well, it's happened because no one can get the price of oil right. They can't even get the direction of oil right, whether it's up or down. In January, when oil was well over 50, analysts confidently predicted oil would average around $56 by July of this year. Wrong! It promptly went straight down, bottoming around $42 in June. Why has everyone been so wrong? Because global oil producers are big cheaters, including Libya and Nigeria. And then Russia did essentially nothing to help cut production. It's been bad news for oil stocks right across the board. Analysts have already cut forecasts for ExxonMobil as well as Chevron. So just look at their stocks. With the S&P 500 up 10% this year, Exxon and Chevron are both down 10% for the year. That's not good. Aside from oil prices, there's another problem. Production growth is flat or declining. It's getting harder and harder for big oil companies to replace the oil that's pumped out of the ground with new oil, particularly in international spheres. Still, there's bright spots. Exxon's massive chemical operations, for example, has done well, and refining operation should also be strong, and big oil is paying big dividends. Exxon pays a 3.8% dividend yield, well above the S&P's 1.9% yield. The dividends are still safe, but it's clear that the stocks are not going to move anymore just because the dividend goes up. They're going to move on whether or not that commodity, oil, goes up. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And we are now at the halfway point of second quarter earnings season, and the news has been good so far. What's behind the results, and will the good news continue? Lindsay Bell joins us, an investment strategist at CFRA Research, to talk about that. Good to see you, Lindsay. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
How would you characterize the quarter so far?
Oh, it's been a great quarter. We've got growth of 8.9%. That's so much better than the 6.2% we were expecting going into the quarter. And it's well ahead of where we're typically at this point in the earnings season. Usually the index is showing a beat rate of about 1.2 percentage points at this point in time. We're at 1.4, so that's really good. Or 2.7. Sorry, my number's off.
Yeah, but so it's better than it normally is really the point you were trying to make there. Bob Pisani
right.
was
it's
just...
better than normally is, and the numbers didn't come down significantly going into the quarter. That's also important. And we're seeing top-line growth come in significantly better than expected. Usually about 50% or so of the companies that report beat on the top line. As it currently stands, 70% of companies are beating our revenue estimates.
That's a really good economic sign. Let's talk a little bit about oil. You just heard Bob Pisani's report suggesting that maybe some of the big oil companies might throw a wet blanket on some of these numbers. But I know you think energy is actually going to be a pretty good performer overall, earnings-wise, if not in the stock market.
That's right. Earnings for the energy sector are going to be up over 300%. For the second quarter. This will be the second quarter in the row where the sector has been able to show increases in profitability after 2 years of declining growth on the bottom line for these guys. So the reason for that primarily is oil prices. They were up in the second quarter. They're 5% higher on average, but that's not as good as what we saw in the first quarter. In the first quarter, oil prices were 53% higher on average. And earnings for this group are highly correlated to that price of oil.
Right.
So while we think this quarter is going to be good, it's not going to be as much of a contributor to the bottom line for the S&P 500 as it was last quarter.
Very quickly, give me some of the sectors that are going to be winners and some of the sectors that are going to be losers when it's all said and done.
Sure. Well, tech is the biggest winner so far. 18% growth in the quarter. It's just after energy earnings growth. Financials has been very strong, 10.5% growth. Those are the two double-digit earnings categories. Staples, we're looking to hear more from. They have 4.5% growth coming.
Okay.
So those are really where your winners will be. And healthcare has also been coming in a lot better than expected.
Lindsay Bell, thank you so much for joining us. Lindsay's with CFRA Research.
And coming up, when it comes to houses, it's a seller's market in more ways than one. We'll explain. Republican leaders working on an overhaul of the nation's tax code say in order to move the plan forward, the controversial border adjustment tax is dead. The BAT, border adjustment tax, was originally a key part of the GOP plan. It would have taxed imports, but not exports. Most retailers lobbied aggressively against the tax. Congress hopes to push through a tax reform plan later this year.
So joining us now with more on tax reform and what's going on with health care is John Harwood. He joins us from Washington. Good to see you as always, John. So let's start with health care. Where do things stand now? What's next?
Well, Republican senators are getting ready to have votes tonight with their Democratic colleagues and try to figure out if they can pass something to get to a conference committee with the House. None of the comprehensive approaches have succeeded so far. Republican leaders are now trying to pass what they're calling a skinny repeal, which is a narrow bill repealing just the individual mandate and some other items as a means of getting to a conference. But, of course, the House has the possibility of simply passing that. Late in the day, we've heard from John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Ron Johnson, three Republican senators who say they will not vote for skinny repeal unless they have a guarantee that the House will go to a conference committee and just not pass it. So it's a confused situation. Without those three votes, it couldn't pass, but we don't exactly know how that's going to go, and voting is going to go late into the night.
On to tax reform, John. The Republicans, as we mentioned, dropped the border adjustment tax that raised a lot of revenue. So how does the GOP keep tax reform from ballooning the deficit?
They do not know, and that's why they haven't told us. That was the number one linchpin of tax reform, in which they could change the tax code in a way that didn't cost the Treasury a lot of money. One option is to find another source of revenue. Another, which I think is more likely, is that Republicans are going to try to figure out a way to pass a tax cut that does lose revenue because it's simply too hard to find other revenue sources. They might be able to do that if they can make those tax cuts expire after 10 years, which is what the Bush administration did early in the 2000s.
You know, earlier this week, we've talked about John McCain, who spoke so passionately the other day on the floor about bipartisanship. Will tax reform be a bipartisan effort as it was back in 1986?
No sign of it so far. Orrin Hatch, the Republican senator of the Finance Committee, has entertained that idea, but there has not been a consensus on that within the Republican leadership.
We will leave it there. You're going to be up late tonight, John. John Harwood in Washington.
But if you're thinking of selling your home, now would be a great time. As Diana Olick tells us, sellers are seeing the biggest profits in a decade, and not just because of higher prices.
Are you all together?
No.
Show up at most open houses today, and you will not be alone. You'll probably see a crowd. It is a seller's market for sure, as demand outpaces supply and profits soar. In fact, those who sold their homes this past spring saw the highest profit in a decade. On average, $51,000 over their original purchase price. That represented an average return of 26%, also the highest in a decade, all according to Adam Data Solutions. Here's why. Home values shot up quickly after the recession and continued to move to new record highs. But it's not just the price. The housing crash kept homeowners in place longer than normal. Those who sold this spring had owned their homes on average just over 8 years, which is the longest tenure going back to the year 2000, which is when Adam started tracking this. That's because values fell so dramatically that it took about a decade to see real gains again. So where were the biggest profits? San Jose and San Francisco, of course, and then Seattle and Denver, which have high demand and extremely low supply. So given all that profit, why aren't more people selling?
I think it really comes down to something we at Zillow often call the musical chairs phenomenon. You know, you don't really want to get out of your chair because you're not so sure if you're going to get another chair once the music stops. And I think a lot of sellers do feel that way right now.
The competition is so fierce, more and more buyers are using cash. That share increased annually for the first time in 4 years last spring. And some sellers are even willing to take a lower cash offer over one using a mortgage just to get the deal done fast. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Starbucks earnings leave investors with a bad taste. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. Quarterly profit matched analysts' expectations while revenue came in light. The coffee giant saw global same-store sales pick up gains thanks to higher customer spending, but it still wasn't enough to beat estimates. Starbucks also said it would close all of its struggling Teavana stores. Shares were volatile in after-hours trading, but they ended the regular day up more than 2% to $59.50. Anheuser-Busch InBev said strong demand in several of its international markets helped to offset softer sales in the U.S. Overall, the brewer of Budweiser and Corona Beer reported earnings that grew, although not enough to top analysts' estimates. Shares jumped 6% to $122.84. Comcast earnings topped expectations thanks to higher revenue in the company's filmed entertainment and theme park businesses. The results were ahead of expectations, and sales at the cable giant also beat forecasts. Comcast is the parent company of CNBC, which produces this program. Shares of Comcast were up by 8 cents to $39.43.
And Twitter is having a difficult time attracting new users to its platform. The social media company reported user growth that stalled from the previous quarter. Earnings and revenue, however, did beat street targets. But that was not enough to improve investor sentiment for the stock. Shares were down very sharply today, 14% or so, to $16.84. Well, the rise in online shopping was a boon for UPS in the latest quarter. The company delivered more e-commerce packages, leading to stronger than expected profit and revenue. UPS also left its guidance for the year unchanged, and that disappointed investors. Shares off 4% at $107.79. Weak demand for Barbie dolls and Fisher-Price toys caused Mattel to post disappointing sales. The toy maker did note that it saw strong sales of products tied to the Cars 3 franchise. Mattel also posted a wider loss. Shares initially fell after hours, erasing a nearly 2% gain from earlier when shares closed at $21.30. And the video game publisher Electronic Arts topped revenue estimates, but the company gave a weak sales outlook for the current quarter. EA also said higher sales of the games Battlefield 1 and The Sims helped earnings beat street targets. Initially, shares dropped after hours and also ended the regular session down a fraction to $117.60.
Finding skilled labor is becoming an increasingly burdensome problem for Main Street. A tight labor market is making it difficult for small companies to find talent. In her latest installment of Small Business Matters, Kate Rogers is in Denver with a look at how entrepreneurs are dealing with the skills gap.
For Denise Burgess, the biggest challenge in running her construction management firm is simply finding the right people for the job. Her business, Burgess Services, is a second-generation family-owned company with 12 to 15 year-round employees. But depending on the size of the project she's working on, Burgess can need more than 100 subcontractors at a time. And that's when things get complicated.
They're younger, not as trained, not as seasoned as previously. And it's also a career path that's not glamorous. It's not Silicon Valley software. It's not Facebook. It's something that you're going to work hard, but you also get paid really well for. So it's a hard thing. It's a hard sell, not an impossible sell.
Burgess isn't alone in struggling with the workplace skills gap. In fact, finding skilled labor has become a top three issue for Main Street behind taxes and government regulations. And here in Denver, it's an extremely tight labor market with unemployment at just over 2%.
This is really good news that companies are looking to hire. But it's a real struggle for them sometimes. It's always a particular problem for smaller companies that don't have the networks that large companies do.
West of Denver in Evergreen, Colorado, Tony Song employs 7 full-time workers at his bike shop, Evergreen Bicycle Outfitters. Song knows those with particular skill sets, including his top 2 mechanics, would be nearly impossible to replace.
As it stands today, with the labor market being what it is and how competitive it is, in the front range, it would be very difficult for us to find a replacement for somebody with that level of experience.
So Song, like Burgess, works to offer competitive benefits like a health care stipend, paid time off, and flexibility in scheduling to hang on to the good workers both small businesses have.
With the cycling industry being what it is, there are very few people who are making, you know, 6 figures plus. So our ability to be able to retain employees has to come from somewhere outside of just the dollar figure that they're making. That ability to hold on to their enjoyment in working in the bike shop is very key.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Kate Rogers, Denver.
Coming up, the $500,000 car Rolls-Royce hopes will reel in a younger crowd. We'll have a first look.
Here's a look at what to watch for tomorrow. We get the first look at second quarter GDP. Economists are expecting the economy in the second 3 months of the year grew about twice as fast as the first quarter. As we mentioned a bit earlier, the market will be watching earnings from big oil companies ExxonMobil and Chevron. And investors will be keeping an ear open for anything Minneapolis Federal Reserve President Neel Kashkari says about the economy and interest rates when he speaks. That's what to watch for on Friday.
Well, it is the status symbol among status symbols, the Rolls-Royce. And tonight, the world's most famous luxury car brand rolled out the latest version of its flagship Phantom model, and more than a decade after the last one. As Robert Frank tells us, this time, Rolls is aiming for a younger audience.
It is the oldest existing car model in history, not to mention one of the most expensive, the Rolls-Royce Phantom. And today, as part of its effort to lure younger buyers, Rolls-Royce unveiled the first new version of its iconic land yacht in over 13 years. It's called the Phantom 8, since it's the 8th version since the Phantom debuted in 1925. The new model is critical to parent company BMW's plan to maintain the Rolls magic in a luxury car market crowded with competitors and younger buyers who want smaller, sleeker, and more stealthy rides. Rolls hopes the new version, with its tougher front end, beefed-up engine, and aluminum body that still weighs in at over 2 tons, will bring in more millennials to the brand.
What we achieved over the last 7 years is to bring the average age of Rolls-Royce customers significantly down by nearly 10 years, from 56 average age down to 45 now. And that is due to quite a lot of factors. Number one is we are playing quite a significant new game when it comes to marketing, social media, the way how we position the brand, but also, of course, what kind of products we are offering.
The price for a new Phantom starts around $450,000. But most buyers pay a lot more since they custom design everything from the onboard humidors and champagne coolers to the star constellations on the ceiling. And selling a $450,000 car requires a different strategy. Rolls created a mobile design center that's been traveling the world, giving rich buyers sneak peeks at the car and private rooms to design their own vehicles.
Our customers are not buying a car, they are buying a piece of art, and they are even commissioning a piece of art. So nearly all of our cars are heavy bespoke cars where customers are putting quite significant efforts into making sure that the car speaks their personal language.
Last year, Rolls had its second highest sales ever, delivering over 4,000 cars. The U.S. is their number one market, although China is gaining fast. And while Chinese buyers like to be driven in the back of their Phantoms, the U.S. buyers prefer the driver's seat. No word yet on the fuel consumption of the Phantom, but with a 6.75-liter turbo V12, Phantom buyers are not likely to care much about gas mileage. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
I like the champagne cooler.
The champagne cooler is nice, and I bet they don't have to care much about the gas price.
No, that's not going to be part of the equation.
That's not a worry.
That will do it. Exactly. That's a Nightly Business Report. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Tyler Matheson. Thanks for me as well. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.